call. City of Austin Firefighters and Police Officers Civil Service Commission versus Kenneth Cassidy et al., cause number 17673CV. Announcements, please.
Ms. Edwards for the City of Austin for the appellants.
Morning, Ms. Edwards.
Paul Barnes for Ken Cassidy and the Austin Police Association.
Morning, Mr. Barnes. For those of you new to Third Court, what I don't believe either of you are, you have 20 minutes to argue the case. I believe you already coordinated with the clerk as far as how much time you want to hold back for rebuttal. I would remind you that we have the lighting system. When the yellow light comes on, that means you're at 2 minutes. When the red light comes on, that means your time is up and you need to look to the court for further time. By way of housekeeping, if anyone in the audience has a cell phone, pager, other device that might go off and distract Ms. Edwards, if you would turn it off at this point, we would appreciate it. And you may not have argued here since we have the audio recording system, but all the arguments now are audio recorded, so keep that in mind. You will have a microphone there that is on at all times, and the recording will be put on our website where you can download it for future use. So with that, we will hear from Mr. Barnes. We'll hear from Ms. Edwards. You all sat on the wrong side, which makes it really hard to be chief.
May it please the court. I'll refer to the appellees as the APA, the Austin Police Association, and I will refer to the appellants as the city. The APA sued because the sergeant's eligibility list expired without promotions of any candidates on the list to sergeant. The classifications for police officers are set forth in Chapter 143, the Civil Service Act of the Local Government Code. It also prescribes that there must be a vacancy for a promotion. The sole reason there were no promotions is because there were no sergeant vacancies.
What's someone's remedy if the city just doesn't offer the test to the folks above so that there never become any opportunities for promotions? That seems to be one of the main beefs here.
Under Chapter 143, there is a deadline by which the city must fill vacancies. But in this case, there were no vacancies to fill. So there was no need, although we do have promotional exams even when there are no vacancies. At this time, there was no pressing need to have an exam because there were no vacancies. The specific vacancy they complain of is at the commander level, which is just below assistant chief of police. These applicants were only corporals and detectives applying for the sergeant's exam.
We've had some chief openings.
And were there vacancies at that level?
At what level?
At the higher level, at the commander level.
There were two vacancies. Okay. At some point, there were two vacancies, but there were seven applicants. There were seven corporals and detectives, and what they sought was to promote to sergeant. The next rank above sergeant is lieutenant. The next rank above that is commander. So their theory is the trickle-down effect of not having a commander's test was that they were not being promoted. Of course, under Chapter 143, and by logic, vacancies are not just created by promotion. They're also created by death, retirement, resignation, or military service. Of sheer coincidence, those things did not happen or did not happen in sufficient numbers to create the vacancies that they sought.
The theory that you just articulated, I anticipate Mr. Barnes is going to argue that that's somehow cognizable under the meet and confer agreement. Can you address that while you're here for them?
I can, Your Honor. And there is one case which I cited in my brief, which they did not respond to in their response, which is the 2010 case of City of Fort Worth versus David Saver. And that is specifically, although it has a different factual basis and a different outcome, it does specifically interpret the two provisions that apply here. Chapter 143 controls civil service. Although Chapter 143 does allow the parties to enter into a meet and confer agreement in collective bargaining, whereby the terms of that contract can supersede Chapter 143. But it only supersedes 143 in the event of a conflict. If there is no conflict, the statute controls. That's set forth in Section 143.307. There must be a conflict for the meet and confer agreement to supersede Chapter 143. They've never pointed to any conflict in this case, not to the district court and not to this court in their briefing have they shown where there is a conflict. They're asserting jurisdiction under 143.306C. Now, that provision does say that the court has jurisdiction within specific parameters. But what David Saver said was, you must then look to 143.307, the very next provision, which says that the district court only has jurisdiction under 306 if there is a conflict. And they've never pointed to any conflict in this case because there is none. There is one distinction. Under 143, promotional eligibility lists expire in 1 year. The parties negotiated in collective bargaining that it would be 2 years, and so it's extended to 2 years. This sergeant's promotion eligibility list expired in 2 years. It expired by operation of law, not by any act of the defendants. Now, promotions are only allowed if there are vacancies. There is neither a statutory right under Chapter 143 or a contractual right under the meet and confer agreement to promote anyone when there are no vacancies. There is also no requirement that we create vacancies. The city's plea was based on lack of subject matter jurisdiction, based on governmental immunity, and lack of standing.
So let me ask you this, just backing up from the underlying merits of the argument. If there's a meet and confer agreement and there's a grievance filed, and the chief reviews that grievance, denies it, and putting aside what's currently at controversy, let's just say there is something that's under the meet and confer agreement and there's a grievance and the chief denies it. What keeps the city from, when arbitration is sought then by the APA, what keeps the city from just saying, no, sorry, we're not going to arbitrate that? Can't the APA go to district court and seek an order compelling arbitration? And if that's true, why wouldn't there be immunity in that case as well?
They can seek an order compelling arbitration under 143.306C, which is what they allege, but that is only if there is a conflict. It in somewhere, the legislature gave us collective bargaining and meet and confer so that we could have local control over some issues, but that's our choice. It must be negotiated in collective bargaining. Anything not negotiated is subject to 143. There's no dispute here that 143 controls, and there's no dispute that the meet and confer agreement controls only if there is a conflict, which they have not pointed to.
So unless they show the conflict to get into the meet and confer, they don't have the arbitration right.
That's right. If there's no conflict, they have no right to arbitration whatsoever. And that's clearly set forth in the statute.
And how does the deck action they pled under the UDJA fit into all this?
It really doesn't, Your Honor. And that's an even more clear governmental immunity issue. As this court has repeatedly found, most recently that I can think of, 1 year ago in Becky Limited, this court says there is governmental immunity when all they seek is what you called an interpretation claim, when they ask to interpret a statute. That's just an interpretation claim. Immunity is only waived under the Declaratory Judgments Act if they claim that the constitutionality or validity is challenged. They don't do that. They just want you to interpret and apply. They want an arbitrator to interpret and apply. But there's only one waiver of governmental immunity under Chapter 143. That's in 143.015. And this court has recognized that repeatedly in City of Austin cases. For example, in Hamilton, which is a 2014 case, and again in Stewart in 2016, this court recognized that the only waiver of governmental immunity in Chapter 143 is under 143.015, and that does not apply here because that is only to appeal a decision of the Civil Service Commission. So because that does not apply, they mischaracterize this as a contract dispute. But it's not a contract dispute. It is Chapter 143 that mandates that there must be a vacancy for there to be a promotion. There were no vacancies. That is not on the city. That is misfortune. It is also common.
I'm sorry.
Excuse me, Your Honor.
If they were bringing a constitutionality or validity claim, then they would have a waiver.
They may have a waiver of immunity under the Declaratory Judgments Act. That's true.
What if they wanted to claim that the city or its officers were simply disregarding or violating 143?
They did not assert what I would say that would be an ultra vires claim. They did not assert an ultra vires claim. They did not say that the chief lacked the authority to deny their grievance or lacked the authority to refuse to go to arbitration. And the reason they didn't do that is because that doesn't work. For an ultra vires claim, they would have to show that it was merely a ministerial act for him to go to arbitration, and that's not true. Because the meet and confer agreement in Article 20, which is the grievance procedure, specifically outlines what an arbitrator may or may not hear. And under Section 4, Step 4 of Article 20, it says, the parties agree that an arbitrator's authority shall be strictly limited to interpreting and applying the explicit provisions of this agreement. The arbitrator shall not have authority to modify the agreement or create additional provisions not in the agreement. So it's not a ministerial act for the chief to get a request to go to arbitration and he automatically sends them. He has to look at what the issue is. So there is some discretion there. They didn't plead an ultra vires act because that simply would not work. There's no waiver of immunity here, and there's also no standing. With that, I think I'll reserve my last 5 minutes for rebuttal.
I wanted to ask a question. I want to go in a different direction. Let's assume that the disposition on the plea to the jurisdiction is affirmed. If we then have to look at the decision to send this case to arbitration, do you concede that this case, if we affirm on the jurisdictional claim, do you concede that this is going to be governed by the Federal Arbitration Act? And if so, is that order even appealable?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I don't have a response for that. What I would say is the repercussions of that would be severe. In this instance, a rare instance, there were 7 candidates and no vacancy, so 7 were not promoted. But it is common that every time some are not promoted. You can't synchronize the number of vacancies and the number of applicants. Those are unknowns. And for this to go forward to arbitration means every single time someone did not get promoted solely because there's no vacancy, we would have to arbitrate that. The repercussions for us are severe.
Does this court have jurisdiction? Let me speak more plainly. Does this court have jurisdiction over the order compelling arbitration?
Yes, Your Honor,
if we have jurisdiction over the case, and if the trial court had jurisdiction over the case, is that something that is appealable?
Actually, Your Honor, if as I asked, you were to reverse the denial, that automatically voids an illegal order, which the court had no jurisdiction to grant. The only thing the district court had jurisdiction to do was to recognize it lacked jurisdiction. It had no jurisdiction to grant the plea or grant their compelling arbitration.
Let me try again. Assume we decide the trial court properly denied your plea to the jurisdiction. I understand that you don't agree with that conclusion, but assume that we do. Do we then have jurisdiction over the trial court's later order compelling arbitration?
I believe you do, Your Honor, and I believe that I addressed that in my reply brief.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Edwards. Mr. Barnes, the floor is yours.
May it please the court. Good morning. I'm Paul Barnes. I represent Ken Cassidy and the Austin Police Association. I'm going to refer to them as the Association for convenience and the city as the city. There's a lot to cover here. I want to start with your question about jurisdiction and the two orders. From the notice we received, this is an interlocutory appeal of the order denying the plea to the jurisdiction. Interlocutory appeals are governed by Section 51.014 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code, which lists specifically what can be appealed in an interlocutory way. And the order granting our motion to compel arbitration is not something that's on that list. Now, a order denying a plea to the jurisdiction by a governmental unit is on that list, and that's why we're here. And that's what I'm planning to talk about today. Basically, you know, the city and the association entered into an agreement under Chapter 143. It has specific language authorizing such agreements to be made between municipalities and associations like the association in question. It grants those agreements the ability to have arbitration clauses. And you'll find that in 143.306B. And it's true that the arbitration clause is superseding the rest of 143, as all of the agreement does. If there's any conflict, 143 is superseded by the agreement, which I'll address later.
I'm sorry, what do you mean? I don't understand that.
So,
you saying that there's a conflict just because there's an arbitration clause?
No, sir. 143 has its own provisions for going to district court if there's a disagreement about the agreement itself, if there's some question about terms, but you can put in an arbitration agreement in to supersede that, which we did, and it does, which was part of the city's brief saying why we shouldn't even be here because we should.
When you say disagreement about terms, are you willing to limit that to just terms under the MNC? I mean, the only thing that can be decided by an arbitrator is disagreements under the meet and confer, correct?
That's exactly true, and I concede that.
We're not going to have some arbitrator deciding issues under 143, the Civil Service Act.
No, I don't believe that's within their power, which okay. is fine. Because
so if you can educate us on what precisely about your claim brings it under the MNC,
well,
as opposed to being under 143.
Let me back up. So back in September of 2016, there was a grievance filed under the procedure in the agreement for filing grievances. And every step was met. It was about promotion lists. The grievance included provisions of the agreement that they thought were violated and could provide for a solution.
And that's exactly what I want to know. What provision are you relying upon to support your claim that the procedure wasn't followed?
Specifically, you know, Article 13, Section 5 of the agreement, and they wanted to bring in past pattern and practice, but
the
association.
Okay.
But
can you tell us what 13 Section 5 is, because we don't have it in front of us?
Yes, it's actually in the record at 102, and it just all of Article 13 deals with promotions, and Section 5 deals with the ability for the city to, there's like a 6-month study time frame window that the city can shorten if it needs to, if a list is about to expire, they can shorten it. But the association's position is that.
And did that happen here?
No, it didn't. But the association's position is that us discussing whether or not the agreement was violated or could be used to fix the situation is not the question before either the district court or this court. That's the question that should be before the arbitrator because the arbitration agreement supersedes 143. We shouldn't be here.
So you're saying 13 Section 5 conflicts with 143?
No, we're saying that the city and the association disagree about what Article 13, Section 5 can do. And that disagreement prompted a grievance, and it should have led to arbitration, and it never did. And we filed in district court not to fix the Article 13, Section 5 issue, but to tell the city, you have to go to arbitration. We disagree about this. We did everything that our arbitration clause provides us to do, and now we have to go to arbitration, and the city refused to go to arbitration. So we filed for a declaratory judgment, a mandamus, and a motion to compel arbitration, all in our petition, saying all we alleged is they violated the agreement in that they didn't go to arbitration, not that they had anything to do with promotion lists. Their violation of the agreement was that they didn't go to arbitration.
What, do you have another violation of the agreement, or is that what you're hanging your hat on?
That's what we're hanging our hat on, sir. That's in our petition, and it's been consistent all the way to here, that they're violate, and the city focuses on how they would win at this arbitration if it happened. They focus on, well, the agreement doesn't allow these promotion lists or whatever. That's fine. Maybe they will win the arbitration. But we need to go there. That's the association's right.
Do you disagree with the city's position that there has to be a conflict between the meet and confer and Chapter 143 before you have a right to arbitration under the MNC?
I don't think it's a relevant question, because we disagree about a specific term of the agreement. It's Article 13, Section 5. In our grievance to the department.
Do you disagree with the definition of grievance or the 13, Section 5?
No, 13, Section 5 is one of the cited provisions of the agreement that we cited in our grievance as something that we disagree on. I mean, the fact that we disagree is why we're here, because if we agreed, the chief of police would have said, okay, we'll fix this. And he said, no, the agreement says this and this and this. And we said, the agreement doesn't say that. And that is the kind of disagreement on terms of the agreement that leads through the grievance process ultimately to arbitration. And that is why there should have been an arbitration. And the fact that there wasn't is the violation of the agreement we're alleging to you, and we allege to the district court. So the district court should never have been worried about promotion lists or what they are or how they work. We didn't ask them to answer that question. We want to ask the arbitrator that question.
But your waiver of immunity is under Chapter 143.
That's right. Chapter 143 has a specific waiver of immunity in 306C, and it would be superseded by the arbitration clause, but the city refuses to arbitrate.
So the arbitration clause is what conflicts with the Civil Service Act?
It does.
I mean, wouldn't that pretty much apply in any case, regardless of subject or allegation, that you guys felt like you wanted to arbitrate?
The point is the arbitration clause means we should never go to district court. We should always arbitrate. All these disagreements should be arbitrated, because the arbitration clause supersedes 306C, which is a specific waiver of governmental immunity by the legislature.
And under C, you're saying that the city was obligated or had a duty to go to arbitration, and that's how the trial court had jurisdiction.
Under their agreement, which they negotiated and put in Article 20, they have an obligation to arbitrate. We have a right to arbitrate unresolved disputes. They have an obligation to submit to them, and vice versa.
This is defined as a grievance.
How do you mean?
Well,
If it falls under the Civil Service Act.
Right. I mean, don't you have to have a grievance?
We do.
Meet the definition of grievance.
The grievance as defined in the agreement, in Article 20, it defines the process. A member or members of the Austin Police Officers lets the association grievance committee know what their problem is. The committee decides if they want to go forward with it. They send it to the chief, he sends it back, and then they go to arbitration, which all happened. I mean, you can find all those documents in the record at 298, 309, 313.
But what I'm still confused about is, so normally you can't contractually agree that immunity is waived.
Right. Immunity was waived in 143. The legislature waived immunity for the purpose of letting these agreements exist, and they exist across the state, not just here in Austin.
So you're saying 143 is a blanket waiver of immunity for any disagreement that comes forth under a meet and confer agreement?
It says that. 143, I mean, I could quote it to you. It says, you know, the district court of the judicial district in which the municipality is located, so Travis County, has full authority and jurisdiction on application of either party aggrieved, so either party, by an act or omission of the other party to a right, duty, or obligation provided by a written agreement ratified as described in subsection A, which is this agreement. And that court has full power to issue any writ, order, or process to enforce the agreement.
But to get there through the pleaded jurisdiction process, don't you have some initial threshold showing you have to make that the claim that you have fits under the MNC and is in an MNC provision that's in conflict with the civil service agreement? Or are you just saying blanket anything that we allege?
We have to show that there was a act or omission that aggrieved us related to a right we had under the agreement.
And the right being, that's exactly the question. What is the right?
The right is our right to arbitration of disputes.
You don't get the right to arbitrate unless you're asserting a right, a grievable right, under the agreement itself. I mean,
right.
You can't say, I want to have peanut butter jelly sandwiches on every shift. That's not a grievable set of circumstances. It doesn't create a... You don't have a right to that necessarily.
Right. Our grievable...
What is the underlying right?
The underlying right...
That brings forth...
The underlying right was certain officers thought that they were not being promoted and that it was a violation of the agreement, including Article 13, Section 5.
That the city shall make reasonable efforts to provide a six-month study time window prior to promotional exams... But it is recognized that the expiration or exhaustion of a list may necessitate an earlier examination.
Right.
And you said
that confers a right.
When viewed with the agreement in its totality, I mean, there's other provisions, and something they wanted to bring before the arbitrator was past pattern and practice of how the agreement had been working and functioning up to that point over the years of its existence.
Well, just because you want to show the arbitrator something doesn't necessarily mean that you have a right that this meet and confer is protecting. A cognizable right.
But
If
the parties are in disagreement about terms of the agreement, then the arbitrator needs to decide who's right.
What about the step where you put on a showing that the disagreement is because of a conflict between the Civil Service Act and the MSA, which is what it takes for you to have jurisdiction to get in front of the arbitrator?
No. To get in front of the arbitrator, Article 20 says you have to show that there's a violation of some provision of the agreement, which the association feels it did in its grievance.
And I misunderstood when you were talking about Article 13, Section 5 earlier.
Right.
The six-month window. You said that really wasn't something that happened here.
No, what I mean is we're not asking this court to interpret that provision of the agreement. We're not asking this court to interpret any other provision of the agreement apart from the arbitration provisions, in that they were not followed. And to your point, I mean, the city may win the arbitration.
Well, and I don't think anyone up here wants to decide the merits of any claim under Article 13.
Right.
What we are trying, I hear, we are trying to get to is what is the right that triggered the duty to arbitrate? That, what is the grievable claim that created the duty to arbitrate on the part of the city? That's our threshold question.
Right. And I mean, if you look at the grievance itself, it's on the record at 298. You'll see it goes into detail about what provisions are implicated of the agreement, what has happened previously, what's expected to happen. And again, the city may win the arbitration, they may lose, but the association has a right to at least have its disagreement heard before the arbitrator. They followed every step of the Article 20 grievance procedure. The city can't just say, no, we're not going to arbitrate that because we think we're right. That's not how contract arbitration provisions work.
How does the relief that you all have requested play in? As I understand it, it's that, you know, there'd be some sort of a pro forma promotion at a level above so that there can be another test offered. I mean, how does that play in to something that would fall under the MNC and conflict with the Civil Service Act?
The association alleges that these pro forma promotions had happened regularly before and they'd become an accepted part of how the agreement functions. And part of how Article 13, Section 5 allows them to happen.
Can past practice alter the Civil Service Act obligations?
It doesn't need to. It can alter the agreement in a contractual way, which is all the arbitrator is hearing. I mean, we're not asking the arbitrator, we wouldn't be asking them to interpret 143.
And you wouldn't need a provision of the agreement at issue there to conflict with the Civil Service Agreement?
No, not, I mean, they could, they, some of them may, some of them may not. But that only comes into play, you know, if you're figuring out if anything in 143 applies or it doesn't. I mean, basically the city in their brief were saying, you know, the arbitration clause supersedes 306C. So we should have arbitrated, which is our whole point. I mean, we want to arbitrate, you know. Does that make sense? No?
As much as anything else.
Yes. Sure. I mean, it's kind of esoteric, but I think that when the city starts talking about how the promotion lists function within the agreement's terms, they're getting into the weeds that we don't need to get into. The point is we had a grievance, they disagreed with it, it needs to go to arbitration, they didn't go to arbitration, and we want the district court to tell them to go to arbitration.
And your one focus on how the MNC conflicts with the Civil Service Act is over the arbitration provision, that they refused to go to arbitration.
Frankly, I'm not focused on that. They were, and I wanted to address it, but I feel like there were.
Is there anything left in this case? I mean, let's say that the trial court got it right and denied the plea to the jurisdiction, then they've ordered the arbitration. What's the purpose of abating? Because that's the entire relief that you sought.
Once arbitration is over, then it's over. Abatement is only to ensure that the arbitration happens. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barnes.
To your earlier question, Justice Goodwin, and contrary to what was just stated, that 143.306B creates arbitration. Arbitration does not appear anywhere in Chapter 143. Arbitration is a creation of the meet and confer agreement. As such, it's not subject to the Federal Arbitration Act. What 143.306B says is that the parties in a collective bargaining agreement may decide a process to resolve disputes. It doesn't say arbitration. And we did that. There's a grievance process.
That being the case, is there a conflict between the Civil Service Act and the fact that the MNC provides for arbitration?
Not at all. There is no conflict there. They must point to a conflict, and there is not. But what you have just heard is that they have an absolute right to arbitration in every instance. You narrow down on it exactly, Justice Goodwin. They can't identify an underlying right, not the right to arbitration, an underlying right that was violated that gets them to the arbitration. What 143.306C states is it must be related to a right, duty, or obligation provided by meet and confer. There's no right to be promoted without a vacancy. There is a right to be promoted when there is a vacancy. If there had been a vacancy and we did not promote, they would have a legitimate claim. But when there are no vacancies, there are no promotions. And the city has no duty or obligation to promote without vacancies. And I strongly disagree that there's a past pattern and practice of doing so. But even if there were, that still cannot be heard. Because under Article 20, Section 4, Step 4, the arbitrator's authority is strictly limited to interpreting and applying the explicit provisions of the agreement. There is no past pattern in practice, but even if there were, that's not within an arbitrator's authority. He may only interpret the explicit provisions of the agreement, and they've pointed you to none.
What is the significance, and I'll preface this with saying I may have misunderstood the record, but it looks as if the chief accepted this thing like a grievance, walks like a duck, quacks like a duck. What's the significance of the way the city handled the grievance up to the point of the district court action?
The chief does consider the grievance, but it is up to the chief to decide whether or not to grant the grievance, and he denied the grievance. They then sought to go to arbitration, and he said we could not go to arbitration because the arbitrator has no authority and cannot legally grant the relief they seek. When you file a grievance, you can't just state what you're grieving about. You must submit your proposed resolution. Their proposed resolutions were illegal. To do these fake promotions and then fake demotions would be illegal. It's a violation of Chapter 143 in the city ordinance, whereby the city council has the authority to prescribe how many positions in each officer classification. Everything that they ask that we extend the expiration of the list to be longer, well, that's already prescribed as 1 year in 143, superseded by the meet and confer agreement to 2 years. The 2 years has expired. We can't extend it. Everything they asked for, which they want to ignore, he said that's getting into the weeds, but he not only denied their grievance because there was nothing grievable, but because of their proposed resolutions, which were illegal, and the chief had no authority to grant them under the law, and an arbitrator would similarly have no authority. I think you've really narrowed in on it. They can point to no conflict. They can point to no right that they were denied. The basic right to promotion, once you're on a candidate's list, is only if there is a vacancy and there was no vacancy.
If we were to find that the city's plea should have been granted, what do we then do with the district court's arbitration award? Would we send it back for the district court to act in conformity, or how would we handle that?
You could do that, I believe, Justice Rose. I believe you could say consistent with our findings. I believe you could also say that it is void because the court had no jurisdiction to compel arbitration. To do otherwise, it circumvents legislative intent. The legislative intent is clear here. The city has governmental immunity under Chapter 143 unless expressly waived by 143.015, which they don't even assert is a waiver or applicable in this case. There simply is no waiver. for the court to have ruled as it did. If there are any further questions?
Thank you both for a well-argued case. The case will be submitted and the court will stand in recess.
Thank you.